live from the Rocky Mountains. It is Redacted. Welcome in. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
And we got a busy show for you on this Monday. Hope you guys had a great weekend. Tons of things happening right now. It's like a nonstop onslaught of news. Are we about to face a trade war at midnight tonight, of course? Tariff going in place at 12:01 Eastern time. Mexico already caved. They had a conversation, Trump did, of course, with Mexico. He's on the phone right now with Justin Trudeau in Canada. So
we don't know what will happen.
We don't know what's going to happen. We're going to watch it all, though.
That's right. We're also looking at the war in Ukraine because Donald Trump says now, hey, we want those rare earth minerals. They're ton gaslighting. Can Redacted just take a victory lap on this? Because we've been covering the Ukraine war for 2 years, saying that the United States' interest was in rare earth minerals that was held by Ukraine. So, that's no longer a conspiracy theory. We can take a point on the board for that one, put one up for Redacted.
Hey, let's also do another victory lap because we also were covering USAID here on the show, USAID, for years on this show, talking about their corruption. We've had a lot of great journalists over the years covering it, from Whitney Webb to Dan Cohen, all of the corruption, the money laundering, mm-hmm. the regime change operations at USAID. Samantha Powell would show up in different countries, and you knew that a regime change was about to happen when she showed up.
Yeah.
Victoria Nuland fomenting a coup in Ukraine. So USAID closed today. The Trump administration with Elon Musk shutting down USAID. So we're going to look at all of that. And liberals are freaking out today, crying. They just held a press conference. They're crying about the closure of USAID, and I couldn't be more thrilled about it.
Oh, no. And like Elon Musk said, we put it in the wood chipper. If they're going to do the same thing with the National Endowment for Democracy, I am going to light a bonfire and get some hot dogs to roast, because this is something we want to see. We've seen so much government corruption funneled through the State Department, through these organizations, and we want no more of that. No more, we're saying.
No more of that. No more. So we're going to get to all of your news here in a second. But first, we want to tell you about our friends at Lear Capital, because, yes, you can invest in precious metals right now. Gold hitting an all-time high last week once again. Silver prices surging as well. A lot of concerns right now. What's going to happen to the U.S. dollar? The U.S. dollar surged overnight as well on this news of tariffs, but will that remain? Who knows? Where is the U.S. dollar going from here? That's why at least a portion of our savings is focused on precious metals. And the team at Lear Capital can help you figure out how to do that. It's very, very simple. You can either have like gold coins, silver coins sent right to your house. You can store them in your gun safe or offsite in a secure 24-hour guarded facility. Totally up to you. But just give them a call. Call their 800 number. They'll walk you through the process. They're an American company. 1-800-613-3557 is the place to go. Have a conversation with them, and you also get one of their free guides right now, because they just put a whole guide together on what Trump's tariffs will mean for your wallet. So go there, call their 800 number, or go to learredacted.com. That's learredacted.com is the place to go.
Well, get ready for a trade war, because at midnight tonight, everything will change for North American trade. Business as we know it will be altered, because the president has announced plans to put tariffs on Canada, Mexico, and China. Now, missing from this conversation is how China will respond, and that's a big piece of it. We're going to flesh that out more. But in the last few hours, the president of Mexico has had a conversation with Donald Trump and said, we will work with you now. So here is the president's announcement of that deal, saying that he spoke with the president of Mexico and they made a deal that Mexican soldiers, 10,000 of them, will go to the border and work their side. Basically, what he wanted was the stop of flow of fentanyl, which has created a humongous crisis inside the United States. But Mexico gets something from it too. In fact, not reported in the president's tweet, but reported by the New York Post, is that the United States will work with Mexico to prevent trafficking of weapons into America's southern border. So the stopping of contraband will go both ways. Obviously, the Mexican people should feel a little bit safer, although everything in Mexico is run from the cartel, so we can't help Mexico to feel safe. But not only will drugs stop coming north of the border, but our president is saying we will start stop weapons and guns from going south. So this is what we call the art of the deal. As we speak, he's speaking to Justin Trudeau. Will we get a similar agreement out of that? We don't know. And we're still waiting to know whether or not China will respond as well.
Well, let's bring in EJ Antoni. He's the research fellow at the Grover M. Herman Center for the Federal Budget and the Heritage Foundation. He's an economist, a well-known economist who's been diving deep into all of this. EJ, welcome to the show. show. Good to see you. This is a fluid situation, obviously, over the past few hours, this deal with Mexico. What's going to happen with, as Kevin O'Leary calls Trudeau, King Idiot Trudeau up in Canada? What's going to happen there? And then we'll get to China. But just first, where do you think things sit right now with the United States and Canada on these tariffs?
I think we're in an absolutely phenomenal position, quite frankly. You know, Trump at this point really holds all the cards, and I think he knows it too. And increasingly, people like Trudeau are beginning to realize that as well. You know, trade wars, much like all wars, are kind of a laboratory of sorts where we find out who is weak and who is strong. Now, what's happening right now in the initial shots of this war, I guess you could say, is that people are beginning to wake up that Trump is not kidding. He's not playing around. He is deadly serious about this. And so that's making people like Trudeau reevaluate their position personally and nationally as well. Again, as that increasingly happens, I think you're going to continue to see these nations bend the knee. We've seen that with Panama. My goodness, Marco Rubio goes down there, and literally in a matter of hours, they're booting out the Chinese Communist Party. Mexico is already bending the knee as well. Again, I think it's only a matter of time before Canada follow suit. So the United States, I really want to emphasize, is in a tremendously strong negotiating position right now. In terms of what are we looking at for cost increases on consumers? Again, I don't think there's much cause for concern here. I think Americans have a tremendous amount of strength. And the reason for that is because we have a tremendous number of alternatives. We don't have to buy Canadian lumber. We don't have to buy Canadian energy. And were it not for all of the subsidies that these nations put in place to protect their own industries and the tariffs that they put in place to also protect their own industries, were it not for those things, then we wouldn't even be having this conversation to begin with. And so, again, American consumers can do without these foreign imports pretty easily. And that's part of the reason why Trump, again, is holding all the cards here.
Well, economists that I follow have said that the Walmart China Amazon effect has kept us from properly recovering from 2008 because it has artificially kept prices low. So would there be some kind of pain point where we actually have to adjust our consumer spending? It's not just my daughter can't spend on Temu or I can't buy dumb birthday tchotchke on Amazon through China. Is there more to it?
Well, there's certainly a lot more going on here. And I think one of the things that a lot of those economists miss in those analyses is the fact that they don't pay attention to things like the currency manipulation that's going on in countries like China, where they are purposely devaluing the Chinese renminbi. We usually call it the Chinese yuan. They're purposely devaluing that relative to the dollar in order to give essentially an artificial boost to their exporters. The other effect that has is the fact that people who are essentially accepting that Chinese currency here in the United States end up taking an absolute bath, because the longer they hold that currency before turning around and buying something back from China, the more value they lose as that currency depreciates. And so that's just one of the ways in which the trade that we have with China does not give America anywhere near the value that we oftentimes think it does. So when you look at factors like that currency manipulation, when you look at the subsidies that happen in Chinese industry, how the Chinese Communist Party has essentially created those subsidies through a complete vertical supply chain, and then also how China circumnavigates tariffs and they essentially abuse agreements like the USMCA, the United States, Mexico-Canada Free Trade Agreement. What they essentially do is things like take goods from China that should be receiving a tariff, but first import them to Mexico or Canada, repackage them. Sometimes they do final assembly work, whatever the case may be. They are more or less abusing the rules in order to not only get rid of the tariffs, but also to get a more than usual favorable trade stance or a trade position for themselves. Again, they're using nations like Canada and like Mexico as a go-between, and they're abusing rules that were put in place for an entirely different purpose.
You know, I want to put this up here on the screen here. I don't know if you'll be able to see it, EJ, but this is a map of the Canadian oil route here. And it's pretty fascinating because there's been so much talk about energy disruption in the United States. What would happen? Well, if you notice that on the right side of your screen is a thing called Energy East, which was a pipeline that was meant to deliver oil from the western part of Canada to the eastern part of Canada. That's been canceled. And the way that oil moves through Canada into the eastern part of that country is through the United States. It goes through the northern part of the United States, in addition to which refining oil has to happen in the United States because the refinery capacity isn't there in Canada. So there's been a lot of talk about energy in all of this. I mean, it seems to me that you're right. We seem to be holding the oil cards here as it relates to Canada. Am I wrong?
Oh, no, that's 100% right. We're also holding all the cards when it comes to natural gas as well. We forget that the Canadian oil industry really has never developed the way it has here in the United States. And so they may have a lot of the raw material, but they don't have, as you pointed out, the refining capacity. They don't have the infrastructure. They don't have a lot of the capabilities to bring product to market. And so would it hurt American refiners, for example, if we had tariffs put in place by Canada? Absolutely, it would, except it would have a pretty minimal impact on those refiners because the Canadian consumer is so incredibly dependent upon the product of American refiners and American refiners exclusively. You know, I've seen, for example, I've heard some numbers thrown around for how high would oil have to go before it would be worth it for Canadian exporters to send that oil somewhere other than the United States to have it refined and brought back to Canada in the form of finished products like gasoline. And the cost would have to get somewhere north of $150 a barrel before it would even resemble profitability. And even at that point, you're just looking at essentially break-even costs. So it is just so much cheaper to send the oil here via pipeline on a relatively short distance than to ship it across, you know, halfway across the world on a tanker and then back again. And so, you know, once again, it's a good example of how our nation's economies are pretty tightly linked. But if you want to talk about who needs who more, if you want to talk about who would lose more in a trade war, you know, the answer, again, is very clear that the deck is stacked in the favor of the United States. And we should point out that, you know, much like in all wars, there are no winners in trade wars, right? Everyone loses, but not everyone loses to the same extent. And so if the United States and Canada really want to go toe to toe and get into a not just a cold trade war, but a hot trade war, then absolutely Canada is going to come out the biggest loser.
Now, something we've spoken out against on this show several times is what we call sanctions of mass destruction. When the Obama administration put sanctions on Syria and Iran, and young people, children are, they die because they can't get antibiotics. So they're innocent victims that have nothing to do with politics. Whereas President Trump's way to do business, his leverage is tariffs, not sanctions. Can you make, even though it's a complicated question, can you make that distinction? And is there something maybe that we're missing, that some innocent people could be hurt by this in a way that we haven't thought about? Is there something there?
Well, again, trade wars, like any wars, are always going to have you're going to have collateral damage, right? You're going to have innocent people, as so far as any of us are innocent, you're going to have innocent people be harmed. That's absolutely true. But it's just a question of what is the end goal here, right? You know, obviously our goal is not to harm any individual person, right? That's not what we're about. What we're about is getting a better deal for the American people. And what we're about is helping the American dairy farmer, the American factory worker, who right now is frankly getting hosed by Canadian tariffs, by Canadian non-tariff barriers, who, you know, those things are essentially preventing our dairy farmers from selling more product in Canada. They're preventing the guy working on a factory line assembling cars, they're preventing his product from being sold in Canada. And if we want to talk about Mexico, my goodness, how many families need to lose loved ones to the fentanyl that Mexico right. is allowing to pour across their open border? And so, you know, look, is there going to be some negative fallout from a potential trade war? Absolutely. Of course there is. But what's the alternative? The alternative is to allow a much worse status quo to continue. You know, Thomas Sowell, one of the greatest economists ever, has often said, life does not ask you what you want. Life presents you with options. And so we choose the best of the options that we have. And in this case, that's to go toe-to-toe with these nations. And if they want a trade war, so be it. We'll win in the end.
Right. Winning hearts with the Thomas Sowell quote. I got Natalie a Thomas Sowell poster for her office for
Christmas. And a sweatshirt.
And a sweatshirt.
I have the collection.
EJ, great to see you today. We really appreciate you. Obviously, this is a fluid situation. Mexico backing down on that, you know, on the tariffs there. We're watching what's happening with Trudeau in Canada, and we're going to see in this conversation what happens with China. Great to see you, EJ and Tony. Thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. All right, we've got a lot more news to get to here on your Monday. We're going to look at U.S. aid. Peter Schweitzer is here, author of like 100 books, excellent books, by the way. Back in the day, I interviewed Peter on his book on the Clinton cash. And holy smokes, the uncovering the Clinton Foundation. And it's amazing, actually, because wouldn't you know that U.S. aid managed to enrich the Clintons through the Clinton Foundation. It's all roads.
I am shocked and amazed by this brand new information.
Yeah, we're going to get to Peter in a second here. But first,
we want to remind you that our show is brought to you by NetSuite by Oracle. What does the future hold for your business? Well, you can find out by making sure that you invest in the best software for your business at NetSuite. Because over 41,000 businesses have future-proofed their business with NetSuite. It's the number one cloud ERP, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one fluid platform. They have prepared this guide for you called the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning. And man, if you're not already thinking about how to implicate that into your business or integrate that, rather, you need to be. So download this free report by heading over to netsuite.com/redacted. Not only will they give you this report, but they will help you to implement all the tools you need to grow your business all in one place. So again, download this free report, the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning. This is free for you, and you can learn about all the other business management suite, giving you one source of truth and visibility that you need to make decisions to grow your business. One more time, head on over to netsuite.com/redacted. One more time, that's netsuite.com/redacted.
Well, the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, which is a front, of course, for the CIA, has been effectively shut down now following an announcement by Elon Musk that President Donald Trump agreed to close the agency. And just this morning, you can see all of the kerfluffle outside there. I love they're saying USAID saves lives, which is hilarious to me when you think about the regime change operations around the world and how many people have died. How about the
million? Oh, no, they're just deciding whose lives they carry.
How about the million Ukrainians who've died at their hands as a result of the regime change there? So, yeah, these protests are additionally more than 600 employees reported being locked out of the agency's computer systems today. The doors basically shuttered. You can see Democrats holding a press conference there. They have a larger budget than the CIA. They're responsible for regime change operations around the world, like in Ukraine in 2014. They were given $5 billion of your tax dollars to carry out a coup in Ukraine, of course, led by Victoria Nuland. President Trump was on the tarmac and he said, USAID is run by lunatics.
USAID, or what's going on there?
It's been run by a bunch of radical lunatics, and we're getting them out. USAID, run by radical lunatics, and we're getting them out. And then we'll make a decision.
So Jamie Raskin, among other Democrats, were there at this little protest today to basically call Donald Trump a dictator and how we have to save USAID.
Elon Musk, you didn't create USAID. The United States Congress did for the American people.
Right.
And just like Elon Musk did not create USAID, he doesn't have the power to destroy it. And who's going to stop him? We are. We're going to stop him.
Never mind the fact that JFK signed an executive order creating USAID, so it wasn't Congress, but don't let facts get in the way. Here's Ilhan Omar, who also had something to say about the Trump dictatorship. Listen.
We are witnessing a constitutional crisis. We talked about Trump wanting to be a dictator on day one, and here we are. This is what the beginning of dictatorship looks like. When you gut the Constitution and you install yourself as the sole power, that is how dictators are made.
Wow, it's almost like they're probably making a lot of money from USAID, that they would get out in the cold weather and give a speech like that. They must be making some money. Let's ask Peter Schweitzer, president of the Governmental Accountability Institute, the author of like 100 books, excellent books, by the way. Here's one, Secret Empires. Here's another one, Extortion, How Politicians Extract Your Money, Buy Votes, Line Their Own Pockets. And Peter, I think I interviewed you a number of years ago when your book on Clinton cash came out, and it's unbelievable to see how the Clinton Foundation tied to USAID, all these Democrats out there in the cold complaining and crying about it. It all kind of comes together, doesn't it, Peter? Good to see you again.
Great to see you guys, too. Thanks for having me, Leland. No, you're right. I mean, the Clintons are an example of how the political classes enrich themselves through USAID, but they are hardly the only example. And that's the problem. It's really twofold. Number one, there are certainly things that USAID has done. You talked about Ukraine that are very troublesome, but it used to be that USAID was supposed to be an extension that protected American interests. Under Barack Obama, that changed. It then became the focus of advancing the so-called millennial goal that have been established. So it no longer became about projecting American power, American influence. It became about, you know, affecting climate change and affecting migration. So it's totally went off of its original Cold War mission. The second problem is the one you alluded to specifically, which is a lot of the money does not go to help poor people overseas. It goes to consultancies in places like Arlington, Virginia, or Bethesda, Maryland, that are run by former politicians that rake in cash, doing quote unquote consulting work on development in these countries. With the Clintons, it happened in Haiti. With the Bidens, certainly Burisma, that corrupt energy company that Hunter Biden was involved in, they were getting support from USAID. So this is an enrichment program, not for poor people in the developing world, but for the Beltway political class.
Now, most of this is run through the State Department, the same way they use the National Endowment for Democracy to decide. And the guise of it is that other countries are so backwards, they don't know how to be a democracy. They don't know how to be progressive when it comes to women's rights and gay rights. And they need us to go and teach them this, which is an incredibly ethnocentric and arrogant mission. So what do you think? I mean, and it's false also. It's a lie. So what do you think these people protesting are actually protesting for? Is it just they don't want Donald Trump to do anything that he wants to do? Or do they actually like the idea of being the boss of the world?
Yeah, it's a great question. Obviously, I can't look into their heads. I can speculate. But I would imagine some of the people there are probably true believers, right? They actually believe that U.S. taxpayer money should be given to them and given to their allies, because, of course, a lot of this money goes to non-governmental organizations upon which former USAID employees sit on the board or are actually collecting salaries. But some of them may be true believers and saying they're entitled to this and they know how to run the world. But I would argue that probably a lot of it has to do with this class of people that have set up consultancies, part of these public-private partnerships that exist to try to fix the world. And the sad fact is it has not worked. It will not work because of the problems in the developing world are oftentimes deep cultural problems related to corruption and other matters. And pumping a lot of government money into those environments is not going to improve the situation at all. So there's a lot of self-interest here. International banks, Wall Street, they love USAID-backed projects because they're guaranteed. They love USAID and other government-backed loans that happen in the developing world because it minimizes risk. And these are the people that are ultimately going to be hurt by ending USAID.
Oh, yeah. Also, it's gender ideology training in Peru. I mean, the list is endless for how much You know, U.S. taxpayer dollars go to these ridiculous DEI programs around the world, and all of this. And someone in our chat room here just made the point. Dana says, you know, it's not U.S. aid. We need to remember that, because you're hearing that, of course, all over TV. It's U.S. aid. It's not. They're not. I think that we, you know, shove that name in there and make it sound like it's friendly and sharing it. But talk about the CIA connections here, because Robert F. Kennedy kind of blew the lid on that, Peter, a few months ago on Tucker's show when he talked about USAID really being a front for the CIA, larger budget than the CIA, responsible for regime change operations like in Ukraine. How connected is the CIA here in USAID?
Yeah, AID. Well, the person in the chat room is quite right. It's not USAID. It's the U.S. Agency for International Development. Right. That is the official name, and it functions as supposedly developing in the developing world. And you're quite right that USAID is connected to the State Department. The State Department is kind of the preferred cover for CIA operatives operating overseas. They might be working in the embassy. They might not be in the embassy. They might be in an NGO, but USAID offers them the opportunity to carry out those policies, and it also gives them money, large sums of money. You know, back in the 1950s, before USAID, the CIA would have to take money out of its own coffers. It would have to get authorizations from the Intelligence Committee to spend $500 million somewhere. Now you can use aid dollars. So if you want to do something in, say, Botswana, you simply provide grants and support through NGOs to your preferred political candidate in that country. So that's how it works. So, you know, eliminating it is, I think, a great solution. Greater transparency on our overall aid program overseas, I think, would be a great idea, because there are others beyond USAID. And I think we need to have transparency, not only to know what ends that money is being given, but what the results are, because these programs are rife with corruption, and we don't find out about them because of their sort of secretive nature.
But something that the Trump administration has indicated is that some of the leftovers that does not poof into the ether will be absorbed into the State Department. And we've seen signaling from Marco Rubio saying, look, we're staying in our own backyard. We're not going to go abroad and tell people how to think and how to live and try and regime change.
Do you believe him? Do we believe him?
I'm not sure I believe that, but I'm shocked to hear it out of a government official. And so is there some... could that be true, that we now honor the idea of a multipolar world, whereas live and let live, respect your neighbors and how they want to run their own countries, sovereignty, that kind of thing? Or is there some kind of fear that this ethos would be absorbed by the State Department and we'll keep doing things like this?
Or that Marco Rubio is a neocon and then his true colors will show, like, you know.
Well, you've just led the witness.
At the end of the day.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I mean, I don't know exactly what Marco Rubio is going to do. What I do know is this: the early signs from the Trump administration is that they're going to deal with the world in a very simple way. If you are adversaries or our enemies, countries like Iran or China, you better be very afraid, because he's prepared to use military force if needed. That doesn't mean putting a bunch of boots on the ground, but using things like missile strikes. If you are Iran and you are going to damage the United States, we're going to come after you. But what he's also showing is he's going to deal with American allies or ostensible friends differently as well. I mean, for decades, we have dealt with countries like Mexico and Colombia and Paraguay and Uruguay, for example, by saying, hey, we'll give you aid dollars. We'll give you lots of money, and then try to help us out if you can. That has not worked out well. All you have to do is look at a country like Mexico, which is effectively run by the drug cartels, which is the gateway for fentanyl in the United States. The Mexican government's known this since the fentanyl crisis began over a decade ago, and they've done nothing. And what Trump is essentially saying to them is, we're not going to try to bribe you anymore. We're going to use a different stick. And we are basically going to say, you don't have access to our market without a big tariff unless you start doing the stuff that we're telling you to do. And the reason is, You should not take friends for granted. And countries like Mexico have taken the United States for granted. And Trump is going to change that, I think, by different tools. We're not going to throw money at you anymore. We are going to put tariffs on your goods and damage your economy if you don't cooperate. And I think that's a very good and healthy step in the right direction and away from the USAID model of effectively trying to bribe these people, and the bribery just doesn't work.
Yeah, I think we've had it with these NGOs. You're absolutely right. Peter Schweitzer has been our guest. I would encourage all of you, go to, you know, go wherever you buy books these days. He's got a fabulous library of fantastically written books. You can read Secret Empires about the hidden corruption there, extortion, his Clinton cash. I mean, it's all, you want to read about the corruption in Washington, D.C., look no further than Peter Schweitzer. Peter, great to see you. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on.
My pleasure.
Well, we have more news to get to. We're going to talk about how NATO may be looking to overthrow Zelensky because all of a sudden they know he's corrupt. They've been busy not knowing that for a long time, but now they're all of a sudden willing to know it. That's interesting. We're also going to look at the bird flu and whether or not there is evidence of gain of function. Okay. Whether or not, but we're going to look at that. Before we do that, though, and we're going to bring in a guest, Glenn Greenwald. We're really excited to talk to him because he's owed an I told you so about the war in Ukraine, just like a lot of us.
Yes.
So before we do that, though, we want to let you know that Redacted is brought to you by PDS Debt. What they are is a debt analysis firm that can help you make a plan and stick to it to get out of debt. Because you know that if you're making just the minimum payment every month on your bad debt, your balances are not going to go down. So you might need some professional help. And that's where PDS comes in, because they have a solution for you. Everyone with $10,000 or more in debt qualifies, and there's no minimum credit score required. Bad and fair credit accepted. You can save more while paying off your debt in a fraction of time. And we all know that, again, going by your payment schedule will not help you or your family. You're just burying yourself in more debt. So right now, you can take control of your debt this year. Get a free debt analysis at pdsdebt.com/redacted. It only takes 30 seconds to go there, and then you are on your way to making a plan to becoming debt-free. That's pdsdebt.com/redacted. One more time, pdsdebt.com/redacted.
Well, are we on the verge of peace in Ukraine? Well, we'll get to that part of the story in a second. But overnight, we learned from Ukrainian dictator Zelensky that he doesn't know where most of the $200 billion in U.S. tax dollars went in his country. He said, you know, you guys sent $200 billion. We keep hearing $200 billion, but all I got was $75 billion. That's all I got. I guess to build all of his houses and for his wife to travel to France. We don't know where that money went. I'm sure that sits well with Americans right now. And by the way, it's interesting that the media has been like really kind of totally silent on that. They were telling us all how Ukraine would collapse unless we sent them all of this money. Where are all those Democratic members of Congress and members of the media telling us all of that?
What's our return on investment there?
It's so silent. All of it. So interesting. Let's bring in the host of one of the great shows on Rumble, System Update, one of the great journalists in the world. That is Glenn Greenwald. And great to see you again, Glenn. Welcome back to the show.
Great to be with you guys. Thank you so much. Thanks for the nice words.
Absolutely, Glenn. So, you know, it seems almost as if the mainstream media were lying to us all this time about Ukraine, that they're suddenly coming around on this idea that, you know what, Ukraine looks like they're going to lose this war. There was never really a chance in all of it. But I want to play this little sort of montage real quick here, Glenn, because this was all of the mainstream media telling us Ukraine is absolutely going to win this war. Watch this.
The Russia-Ukraine war is entering a stalemate.
The war has reached a stalemate.
A deadly stalemate. In other words, neither side can win because it's a
stalemate. Stalemate. Those are the headlines tonight. But are they behind? Like yesterday's news, is the real truth the Ukrainians are winning?
We know that Ukraine will win.
This is
Yeah, okay. There's just a sample of that, Glenn. It seems like, were they lying to us?
Oh, my God. Wait, you're saying the corporate media might have been lying about a war that the United States was involved in? I can't believe that. I need a second to compose myself. You know, if you go back to the 2022 and into 2023, pretty much two full years at least, it wasn't just that anyone who justified Putin's invasion of Ukraine was decreed to be a Kremlin propagandist. It was far, far, far broader than that. It was anybody who was saying that what was going to happen is, by all accounts, what everybody now acknowledges, even in Western European capitals, is in fact happening, which is that Ukraine is the most corrupt country, at least in Europe. There's going to be a huge disappearance of these billions of dollars sent there. Ukraine has absolutely no chance of winning the war just based on size alone. Russia can win a war of attrition. And that eventually what's going to happen is that Ukraine is going to have to cede a significant portion of its territory either as a semi-autonomous buffer zone or to be annexed by Russia. And the only choice is not will Russia win. Russia will win. The choice is whether the United States and West and NATO is going to force Ukraine to endure a devastating war that destroys the entire country, that requires hundreds of billions of dollars to rebuild and wipes out an entire generation of men who did not want to fight in this war for the most part. They've been increasingly forced to the front line. And anyone who tried to raise any of that was not just in discourse, but by formal decree of the Ukrainian intelligence agencies, take it, believe me, I know I've been on several of those lists, decreed to be a pro-Russian propagandist. And as usual, unfortunately, it takes 3 to 4 years for us to now arrive at the point where Washington acknowledges that everything it said about this war proved to be untrue. It was a gigantic waste of life and money and destruction. BlackRock and all those other vultures are circling Kiev in order to profit off the rebuilding that the United States taxpayer will pay for. And so everything that was predicted in terms of worst case scenario has come true.
Well, yes, that was our experience, too, because we were not experts on Ukraine. But you know what we did is we studied before we opened our mouths, and that turned out to be pretty good tactic.
We were Putin puppets.
Do you know the comic Boris and Natasha? That's what they called us.
Yeah, they called us Boris and Natasha.
The Russian, can you see, because of the dark hair. Someone said that Clayton was married to Dmitry Peskov. That was put on his Wikipedia. I mean, we really were tortured as Russian propagandists, and now we can take a victory lap. Now, the Russian intelligence service is reporting that NATO may have a plan to oust Zelensky because they have been all of a sudden awakened to the fact that he has corruption inside of his government. When they've been so busy with blinders on, why do you think they are motivated to see what the rest of us could see in plain sight?
Well, if you go back to the summer of 2023, that was when we were promised that everything was going to be changed. There would be this great Ukrainian offensive that would push the Russians all the way back. All the same people who have been defending wars forever, Max Boot and David Petraeus in the Washington Post and Bill Kristol and the Kagan spawns assured us that this offensive was coming and this is going to be and it completely failed. So by the fall of 2023, which is more than a year ago now, Ukrainian officials at the highest level who had been pretty, you know, positive about the war were leaking that the only person left in Ukraine who believes that Ukraine can win is Zelensky. And he's kind of completely detached from reality in the way that leaders get when they cut off any democratic accountability. Of course, he proclaimed himself indefinite president, no more elections, no more any democratic accountability. And they were trying to cry for help that, look, if Zelensky is saying that we can win this war, nobody else in Kiev thinks this. And you started to see huge cracks in what had been a pretty unified Ukrainian government, which is what happens when a country is at war. It's totally normal and lasts for some time until they realize that nothing good is coming from it. And finally, now this is all sort of seeped out and spilled over. The Russians are advancing every day. The Ukrainian front line continues to crumble. There's massive dissent within the Ukrainian government. And I always thought there was a chance that, especially when Zelensky is forced to negotiate a peace deal, that this extreme nationalist, radical, right-wing Azov battalion and all of those people who we were told for a decade were dangerous and then told we weren't allowed to talk about once the war starts could be a threat to Zelensky, could oust him because they won't accept any kind of deal with Russia. And yet at the same time, Ukrainian survival depends on a deal, and their patrons in Washington and in Europe are now forcing it as well. And so I do think Zelensky is in an extremely precarious position.
You know, of course, after the 2014 and beyond, there was a genocide being carried out in what was formerly Eastern Ukraine, of course, and Donetsk and Donbass and all of those ethnic Russians who were being slaughtered on a daily basis, petal mines being launched into children's playgrounds where their limbs and hands were being blown off. So these people voted, and they voted to become part of the Russian Federation. Well, President Trump this morning in the White House just talked about the negotiation tool that seems like he might be using here, which is around rare earth minerals. I want to play this soundbite and get your thoughts on this, Glenn. Is this sort of a strategy move here that he could play against Putin? But here's what the president had to say. Listen.
We're telling Ukraine They have very valuable rare earth. We want what we put up to go in terms of a guarantee. We want a guarantee. We're handing them money hand over fist. We're giving them equipment. European is not keeping up with us. They should equalize. And look, we have an ocean in between. They don't. It's more important for them than it is for us. But they're way below us in terms of money. And they should be paying at least equal. They should really be paying much more than us. But let's say equal to us. And they're billions and billions of dollars below. So we're looking to do a deal with Ukraine where they're going to secure what we're giving them with their rare earth and other things.
So rare earth minerals. A lot of these rare earth minerals are under the ground in what is now the Russian Federation. So what's your sense of this sort of bargaining tactic here?
Well, I think there's been an assumption in the West, and probably it was true for the first year, year and a half, that Putin wanted a deal, he was ready for a deal, that the deal would be something like just Ukraine would never enter NATO, at least not for the next 30 years or 40 years or whatever, and that these eastern provinces that have a lot of people who identify as Russian, they're Russian-speaking and they're ethnic Russian, they've had their rights trampled over, as you said, they've been violently attacked, and the Russian government feels an obligation to protect them for obvious reasons, on top of obviously keeping Crimea, which is non-negotiable for the Russians, that was a deal that probably could have been had and could have been had pretty easily. In fact, they got pretty close to that deal early on when Boris Johnson and the Biden administration came in and Victoria Nuland said, this is not a deal that you can do. This is not a deal that you should accept. And so they didn't, because they had to listen to the people who fund them. The problem now that Trump has, who obviously wants to end this war, and he's talking about basically turning Ukraine into a vassal state, like give us all of your, you know, crucial assets if you want us to continue to support you. So you're going to have the Russians occupying part of Ukraine, and then the rest of Ukraine is going to be a vassal state to the United States. Oh, we did such a good job for Ukraine and the Ukrainians with this war. But the problem is that Putin has spilled enormous amounts of blood, spent enormous amounts of money, does not trust any Western country, including the United States, even with Donald Trump, does not trust NATO at all. And who can blame him? And the bargain that he's now going to drive if NATO wants a relief from this war without a humiliation, which is what Trump has to do, is not going to be an easy deal. It's going to be a very hard deal. That's what happens when you win a war, is, you know, you get the spoils to the victor goes to the spoils. And I think people in the West have not quite grappled with this yet. The idea that just because Trump goes in and threatens the Ukrainians doesn't mean the war ends. You have to deal with Putin as well. And that might be much harder because he's not dependent on the United States the way the Ukrainians are.
Glenn Greenwald, one of the greatest journalists in the world, host of System Update on Rumble, fellow Rumbler, free speech platform. Great to see you, Glenn. Love your analysis, as always. Thank you so much for taking time out tonight to talk with us.
Great to see you guys. Love your show. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Glenn. Well, we got a lot more news to get to you here on your Monday. Thanks so much, Glenn. Great to see that. And yeah, I'd love to get your thoughts on this in the chat room here. You know, it's really fascinating to think about the like
what
Putin's
will
not
become
trust
of Ukraine?
Any of them,
right? And over the weekend, I think many of you might have seen that there was a trending video between Piers Morgan and Tucker Carlson, where Tucker Carlson takes the piss out of Zelensky as a dictator, which I think is irrefutable. Yeah. If you make a checklist, dictator checklist, how to become one, Zelensky checks all boxes. So if in fact now the United States says we will work with Ukraine, but you need to hold elections, we need to work with your democratically elected leader, and then what? Who do Ukraine and support when they will have nothing left? They will lose the Donbass. They will never get Crimea back. And their resources will be funneled outside, so they will never be enriched by their own enriched land. How does this work for them? They were always going to lose.
Yeah.
I don't understand a peace to prosperity and sovereignty for Ukraine. And we could have had that, and we refused.
Yeah, and it was always part of the plan all along, of course, was to drive Ukraine to the fight, you know, fight to the last Ukrainian. That was always the plan of people like Adam Schiff and others to use Ukraine. He told us, Adam Schiff told us, we fight it over there so we don't have to fight it here. And then Ukraine will fight to the last Ukrainian, as right. Lindsey Graham said. So this
but,
has been
but
their plan
you
all
can
along.
See here, we have two converging messages. At the very least, Hillary Clinton told us that we think Ukraine will become some kind of extension of American business. Now Donald Trump is saying the exact same thing. He's just not saying it in a cagey way. We want to benefit from these, right?
Well, BlackRock owns half the country, right? I mean, they went in and bought up all this land already. So this, I don't know, you know, Trump's sort of saying this, but I mean, I think that ship has already sailed. Like a lot of this land has already been ceded in many ways to BlackRock and Vanguard. They've already gone in and bought up all of this land.
And we're not championing this by any stretch, because I would like to see Ukraine become a less corrupt place, which enriches its own people and has sovereignty and freedom of religion and speech. I don't see a path forward to this. We're not saying this is great. We're saying I told you so, because that feels good.
Has the CIA...
After being called Boris and Natasha.
Has the CIA... I mean, the CIA, of course, created a coup that led to this current government there. That's what led to the separation.
Indubitably.
So, I mean, has the CIA ever, I think it's back to a question Philip asked a couple of months ago on the show, or a couple of weeks ago, has the CIA ever had a regime change operation in a country that's gone well for them, that has gone well for the United States? Because it doesn't seem like that. And now we have this giant mess on our hands inside of Ukraine.
Were they around for the Revolutionary War? Because I think that's the only regime change I can think of that the U.S. has been a part of that's worked out well.
Yeah, that's about it. And no, they weren't around then.
Okay, we have early reports now that Justin Trudeau is sending close to 10,000 personnel and new choppers to the northern border and appointing a fentanyl czar to stop the flow of drugs into the United States. So I wouldn't call this caving. I would say... the deal is working. Well, if that is in fact the case, we will continue to report that.
It is a cave because they were tonight at midnight is when these tariffs were going to go into place against Canada. And so this is a cave because now Trump is pushing this off for a month, just like he did with Mexico, saying we'll review it in a month. And by the way, if in a month this doesn't work out and you haven't stopped the flow of fentanyl into our country and you haven't stopped the flow of illegal immigrants across the northern border into the United States, guess what?
We'll play this card again.
It's not 25% tariffs. It'll be 50% tariffs.
Yeah.
So,
okay. It's like when my sister holds her Uno cards, the draw four instead of draw two. You know, like, okay, we're not going to play this draw two, but we got to draw four. So... hold, please, and stop the drugs.
So just to be more clear on this, so you mentioned the 10,000 frontline personnel that'll go to the border now in Canada. They'll also implement a $1.3 billion border plan. $1.3 billion? Do you guys know how... That wouldn't even cover like a mile worth of border wall. Mm-hmm. You're going to... okay, a $1.3 billion border plan. All right. We'll see how this all comes together.
It's just... it's so frustrating. Why didn't anybody else do this? Why have we allowed drugs for years and decades? Okay. It's nice to see somebody doing it, but it's if it really was a matter of a couple of weeks and a strong arm, I'm incredibly frustrated.
I mean,
I'm also obviously incredibly frustrated. Go ahead.
I was going to say it's very speculative, but I'm pretty sure I've seen connections with the CIA is involved in the drug trade. So, like, that could have something to do with why nobody's done anything about it, because there are people profiting off of it other than the cartels.
Oh, yeah, right. Massively. Go back to the 1960s and read the great book Chaos and how the CIA was intimately involved in drugs pouring into the United States and being a part of those groups and organizations. So, yeah, well, I guess if they cut off the funding, they just cut off the head of USAID, which is a front, or USAID. Which is a front for the CIA. Maybe that's a kick in the balls for them. So
yeah, but I mean, it's hard not to chew on this question. Why didn't we do that before? Why didn't, for instance, I think, you know, my sister lives in Mexico. I have family in Mexico. And now Mexico is starting this program for repatriates who were deported from the United States called Mexico Te Abraza, where they're getting 2,000 peso debit cards and travel expenses and help. You couldn't have helped those people before, so they didn't need to migrate. You couldn't have maybe kept them safe from the cartel. You couldn't have done that before, but now you're doing it? Okay.
And a few minutes ago, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth just sent a message. He's at the border in El Paso and said, all options are on the table. We will secure our border and our men and our women guarding it, and we are proud to be here. So, again, all options on the table about face-to-face confrontations with the drug cartels in more shootouts, perhaps, with the U.S. military. It's like going back to the 1800s again. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we've got more news to get to. What are we going to talk about coming up?
We're going to talk about bird flu and whether or not there is gain of function proof why scientists are saying it's really not as deadly as we had hoped. or thought. I don't know.
They really wanted it to be the next pandemic, I'm sure.
Yes. So we're going to talk to Dr. James Thorpe. He's an OBGYN from the Wellness Company, and he has been studying the COVID pandemic in depth, and he's going to tell us what he thinks of the bird flu possible pandemic. But first.
But first, Americans still have kitchen table problems right now. A lot of us carrying really high credit card balances that charge 20% or more. It's highway robbery. I mean, it's time to get rid of those. So homeowners, if you've been waiting to figure out how to get your finances in order, you need to call our friends at American Financing today. American Financing salary-based mortgage consultants are helping homeowners just like you tap into their home's equity to get out of high interest debt. They're saving an average of $800 a month for their customers by doing this. Saving that kind of money every month should make the decision really easy. All it takes is a 10-minute, no-cost obligation phone call to find out how much you can save. And if you start today, you may be able to delay two mortgage payments. Call American Financing today, 866-890-8434. That's 866-890-8434. Or just go to their website, AmericanFinancing.net/redacted, and have a quick phone call with them. And NMLS 182334. Thanks to AmericanFinancing.net/redacted.
On the news that USAID has been funding gain-of-function research around the COVID pandemic, it begs the question, has that happened with bird flu? Is that why we are being warned about it? A recent article in the academic press has doctors wondering why the new bird flu strain is so mild, as if they kind of want a different outcome. Well, Dr. James Thorpe has joined us from the Wellness Company. He has an upcoming book coming out called Sacrifice: How the Deadliest Vaccine in History Targeted the Most Vulnerable. And he warned about the implications of the COVID pandemic loud and wide, and was widely censored and ignored. So thank you for joining me to talk about where we are now, Dr. Thorpe.
Thank you so much for having me on, Natalie.
So it seems that the drumbeat is getting louder and louder regarding the bird flu. So the first question then, in light of what we went through for COVID, does this seem a repeatable pattern? Why are doctors asking, huh, this is kind of mild, wasn't supposed to be like that. Hasn't that, what's going on there?
Yeah, it's really deja vu all over again, isn't it? And we know now that this gain of function was perpetrated in the COVID-19 vaccine, clearly, and it was supported by the United States government through Wuhan Institute of Virology. The same thing has been going on, Natalie, for decades and decades with many potential pathogens. With regard to H5N1, the avian flu, we know, we can prove that this had gain of function performed on it, actually through the USDA Poultry Center, Research Center in Athens, Georgia. This is where the gain of function research took place.
Isn't that where the victim who died recently was, in fact, in Georgia? I didn't realize that there was that correlation. Doctors have said, well, you know, we better brace for this because bird flu has a, we hear various numbers between 30 and 50% fatality rate. But in the United States, it's been very mild. And so the one person who did die of this had comorbidities. And so doctors are saying, huh, it's kind of mutated. It's milder than we thought. And so is there a possibility that, of course, there was gain of function and they accidentally made it less dangerous?
Well, I'm not sure if that individual was in Georgia or Louisiana. I think the individual was from Louisiana, and this
okay,
was
you're an, right. You're right.
An individual that was elderly and multiple other illnesses and protracted hospitalization. So yes, you're right. There's about 70 cases in the United States of America. All the vast majority are mild, and I think that this is largely overblown by the stakeholders that have a tremendous amount to gain, the vaccine manufacturers and also the government. And also remember, there's private funders too, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Right. And so we see Bill Gates being reframed as this person who has benevolent intentions towards vaccine and is, I'm going to use the word, weaseling his way into the Trump administration. At the same time, we see the Trump administration placing pauses on new research and deciding that these organizations that has funded these research are being either revoked or they're atrophied. And so is it something that the Trump administration could pull back and stop? Or do you think it's just too big of a beast and it's a whack-a-mole game?
I'm optimistic. Bobby gets confirmed, I'm optimistic that this so-called dual-purpose gain-of-function research will be completely shut down. And you know what that is, but for your audience, dual-purpose is the thought where it's gain-of-function research, but it's okay because we're going to create a pathogen and then we'll create a antidote or a vaccine for it. This is very dangerous, and this needs to stop immediately.
Right. It's very similar to the weapons labs that we have in Ukraine. And we're like, well, we're just reverse engineering them. We're not putting them together. We're unputting them together to learn something. I mean, who buys this? And so can you remind us that we have curatives now for bird flu the same way we did for the COVID pandemic? And what is it we can know now that in the future we may not be able to know if the same censorship government has its way?
Well, yes, there are curatives, and I think we need to be aware of it, and they're very simple. Let us not forget that just 6 weeks ago or 8 weeks ago, it was Dr. Peter Hotez who told us there were going to be multiple pandemics breaking out the day after Trump was inaugurated, right? So, but for this, I would not be scared. Just be prepared. You know, we at the Wellness Company have been talking about this sham for over a year. And I think that most of our audience is prepared. Nobody's afraid of it. You know, we have this immune spray, immune mist, and these iodinated gargles, nasal mists, throat sprays. These are very, very effective early on. And also with our contagion kit, we have several potential remedies, including, for example, hydroxychloroquine, which has shown efficacy. We also have Tamiflu, which has been had shown efficacy. Also, I want to remind all of our viewers that I recommend personally that you check your own blood vitamin D level, and a lower normal level is not adequate. I would like you to get it up to the 90 range, the upper limit of normal range. And this is the most effective preventative and will reduce if you do have a large contagion. This will really remedy and decrease your vulnerability.
So we saw Gavin Newsom declare a state of emergency in December over bird flu. What is the emergency, and what could a government possibly be up to in doing something like this? And of course, it's rich now that a few weeks later, his entire state burned and he's looking at bird flu, probably one of the many reasons he's facing yet another recall vote. What are politicians like Gavin Newsom doing?
Instilling fear in the population, because if they instill fear in the population, we can control them. And they want to market this. Remember what they've said in the past. Don't let any disaster, go to a bad use. It's an opportunity to control the people more. And there are the proponents and the stakeholders that are pushing for a vaccine. There's already a human vaccine, Sequarius, and that was released in Northern Europe. And in fact, there were four times the number of deaths, if you can believe this, Natalie, in the treatment group than the placebo group. And now Moderna has a contract. And again, this is a massive moneymaker for the pharmaceutical, the corporate kleptocratic government pharmaceutical medical complex.
Now, you are practicing OBGYN. One of the main tenets of your book is that the COVID-19 vaccine was given to populations that did not need it and resulted in harm. And I'm going to say this carefully because we are still under the guidelines on certain platforms we stream on to defer to the World Health Organization, which has continued to say that the COVID-19 vaccine was amazing and saved lives across the board. my facial expression will tell you how I feel about that. But something that was prominent in the RFK confirmation hearings was that individual metabolic health makes a difference, and there is no one-size-fits-all treatment across the board. So can you tell us a little bit about how you make that point in your book, again, within the confines of the censorship regime we still broadcast under?
Yes, and I'm not exactly sure the details of your constraints, but let me just say clearly.
Well, what YouTube says is that we must defer to what local authorities and the World Health Organization says. And so we know the World Health Organization promotes the COVID vaccine. And in fact, just months ago, they said, continue to get your boosters. We know that the United States has withdrawn from the World Health Organization. So what we cannot say is specifically things against the COVID-19 vaccine, but we can sort of imply things. And I apologize to my viewers for saying that those are, I would say things much differently if I could.
Yes. Well, I would just point the readers and the audience to the actual Pfizer data themselves. The initial 5.3.6 post-market survey. And is it appropriate for me to review that to your audience?
You can. I will point out that we got a 2-week suspension in 2021 for reading that very marketing data. We can, in fact, say what it says now. And I think what I'm asking you is about these various targeted population as an OBGYN. I think what you're referring to is pregnant women and small children, right?
Right. My population, I've been in practice for almost 46 years now, Natalie. I'm still practicing actively. And there's always been a golden rule of pregnancy. You never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, implement a novel substance in pregnancy. And I think you know that. And most of the world knows that. That's been a 6 millennia golden rule. So we, especially in the last 100 years, we've learned our lesson with the horrible disasters of thalidomide and diethylstilbestrol, DES. And listen, the current vaccine makes DES and thalidomide look like prenatal vitamins.
Okay. What do you mean by that? Because they're promoting it so much.
Well, what I'm saying is they're more, so much more lethal and deadly, the current preventative measure, if you will, by far and away, this is a million times greater than the disasters of diethylstilbestrol and thalidomide.
Okay.
The inoculation.
And so then, and yet, it, on the heels of the COVID vaccine, we get a RSV vaccine for pregnant women, which again comes in under the auspices of fast-track authorization from the FDA. So is this just something that we're going to have under, unless the Trump administration and RFK Jr. stops it, is fast-tracking vaccines and no more questioning prenatal care?
Well, I'm in active practice. I can tell you where I'm practicing right now. No pregnant women are taking any vaccines. And there's not any vaccines in pregnancy that should be taken. None of them. They've never been proven to be safe or effective in a randomized double-blinded trial and never had long-term follow-up in the children.
Yeah.
And I will also say that, you know, even recent studies have demonstrated that sudden infant death syndrome, 78% of those cases occur within a week of vaccination of infants, Natalie, and 58% occur within 48 hours.
Wow, that's an amazing correlation. Yes, that needs to be studied, honestly. So that's another thing we can ask under the RFK Jr. Health and Human Services Administration. So the book, again, is coming out in February 18th. It's called Sacrifice, How the Deadliest Vaccine in History Targeted the Most Vulnerable. I remind you that Dr. Thorpe is with The Wellness Company, which is a sponsor of Redacted. They offer a contagion kit where you can collect some of these curatives in your home in case we are not allowed. We've told you about that before. It's twc.health/redacted. So Dr. Thorpe, thank you so much for your time and your expertise, and I hope you'll come back once the book is released and we can talk more about that.
Thanks for having me on, Natalie.
That's going to do it for us today at Redacted. Thank you so much for joining us. It's a busy week, so stick with us. I can't imagine what this week is going to unfold, but it's changing. It's a changing world, and we're in it together. So recall that we have the Redacted newsletter. You can keep up with us there. It's redacted.inc. And hey, if you want to signal to the world that you are into Redacted information, you are a knower of things, then go to redactedstore.com. Check out our offerings of t-shirts that will prove that you were right all along. My favorite is the conspiracy knower. That is really something. We've been batting 1,000 here with our conspiracies here, which are not conspiracy theories, but actual conspiracies. There's more there. A breakfast mug, whatever you'd like. So check it out at redactedstore.com. We'll see you right here tomorrow, everybody. Tomorrow is Tuesday. Be here for Tuesday.